Representative Feige has a bill in another committee at this time. Representative Peterson, Representative Gruenberg, and myself, Representative Wilson. And I'd like to recognize the staff today. Nancy Hemingway is in the center of the room in the back, and Beth is our LIO monitor in the purple. And my committee aide is Becky Rooney, and she's in the coral. And before we start, please turn off your cell phones. So today we will be hearing House Bill 345, waive CDL skills tests for certain veterans, and House Bill 212, provisional driver's license sticker. So, Representative Sadler, would you come forward and state your name and introduce your bill?
Thank you very much. All right. Madam Chairman, members of the Transportation Committee, I'm, for the record, Representative Dan Sadler, District 18. I'm here to present House Bill 345, waiver of CDL skill test for certain veterans. HB 345 will help Alaska's returning military personnel find good jobs and help Alaska businesses find qualified drivers. It'll do so by acknowledging that most military drivers leaving the service already possess the skills they need to be productive and safe drivers in civilian roads. The U.S. military depends on trucks and on truck drivers, the so-called 88 Mikes. That's the military occupation specialty. 88 Mike is motor transport operators. Now, defense budget cuts indicate that we may be seeing a lot more veterans with the 88 Mike designation looking for work in our state. Fortunately, there are many industries in our state that are eager to hire experienced commercial truck drivers. The civilian commercial driver's license, or CDL, is a valuable credential that offers a significant boost to anybody looking for work in the civilian job market. CDLs are issued by the states, but under strict federal standards. HB 345 simply directs the Department of Administration to adopt regulations in accordance with federal standards. Those regulations will allow these veterans to use their military driving experience in lieu of the road skills test, as long as the applicant meets other certain standards. In order to qualify for the waiver, a driver must have spent at least the last 2 years or more driving the kind of equipment he or she hopes to use in the military, in the civilian job, excuse me. They must have worked for the last 90 days as a military driver and must meet federal exemption standards outlined in CFR 383.77, which is in your packet there. And third, to qualify, a driver must not have ever had a license suspended or revoked, had more than one minor traffic violation, been convicted of any driving offense involving drugs or alcohol, or been convicted for any serious traffic violation involving an accident. These standards, along with the requirement that military drivers must still meet the knowledge test, endorsement-specific knowledge tests, and medical tests, offer assurance that Alaska roads will be just as safe after this bill passes as they currently are today. In summation, Madam Chair, Alaskans who hone their driving skills while still in service to our nation deserve to have that experience validated and honored in the civilian world. House Bill 345 is an important tool to help them get the credentials they need to get good jobs in the civilian sector and to help Alaska employers hire skilled drivers. And that concludes my opening remarks. I'd be glad to answer your questions, or we have a couple folks in line to answer questions on the technical aspects of the bill.
Representative Guttenberg, do you have a question?
No, but I'm Grunberg.
Sorry. Representative Peterson,
I know he doesn't have any questions either. No problem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Sadler, I was wondering what type of documentation would the veterans be required to bring with them to the DMV to get this waiver?
To the Chair, Representative Peterson, there are requirements, but I'm going to let Whitney Brewster, who's the director of the DMV, answer to the specific technical requirements because, again, this bill is largely to authorize the state to adopt regulations that conform with federal standards. Those are pretty strict, so I'll let her speak to those if I may.
Okay.
Okay. Whitney, you're online. Why don't you go ahead and answer that? We'll answer the questions as they pop up.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. There are several states that have implemented this waiver program for military personnel, including Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Washington, New York, and Nevada, and those are the ones that I'm just directly aware of. I would think that we could fashion our program after something similar, similarly adopted by Pennsylvania. They require that the applicant show a military driver's license that, clearly shows the type of vehicle an individual is authorized to drive. And it, but if it's not clear on the military license, they allow for what's called a verification of military experience and training document, which is offered apparently by the military. They also allow for a letter on military letterhead that lists the specific vehicles that an individual is or was allowed to operate on, again, on military letterhead as a substitute. And they also require a DD-2 or a DD-214 within 2 years of honorable discharge. And like I said, there have been many, many states that have already adopted a similar program. I would look at what those states allow for substitute documents and implement something very similar in Alaska through regulation. But just in general, those would be the things that we would be looking for.
Okay, Whitney, now it says in the bill a driver must have spent the last 2 years or more driving the kind of equipment he expects to use in the civilian job, and must have worked the past 90 days as a military driver. So are you going to make sure that what requirements you have meet the aspects of this bill?
Madam Chairman, yes, the DMV will certainly do that, and it will also make sure that it meets the federal requirements, because commercial driver licensing is a federally regulated program. That we would meet the requirements in 49 CFR 38377 that specifies what evidence is to be shown to the DMV.
Okay, thank you very much. And let the record show that Lance Pruitt, Representative Pruitt, has joined us. Any other questions? Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Brewster, I'm looking at the sponsor statement, the section that the chair has just referenced, but I don't. Are those all contained in 49 CFR 383.77?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, the 90-day requirement as well as the two-year. A two-year requirement for operating a similar vehicle, yes, that is listed in federal regulation 49 CFR 38377. Those requirements are listed in the federal regulation. But the thing is that we could make, as a state, make the requirements more restrictive. When we adopted the waiver program, those are minimum requirements in federal regulation.
I see. May I continue, please?
Follow-up, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you. So the various disqualifying things like not more than one conviction for serious traffic violation, that's only in the last 2 years, right?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that is my understanding.
Yeah, that's the way I read it, too, because I don't think there are many people around who've done much driving who've only had one traffic violation, and I'm almost 70. That would be in 50 years. That's, don't laugh. That's pretty tough. But we're talking about in the last 2 years. I think that's doable. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Let me see what we've got here. Online, we do have Aves Thompson. Aves, are you in line?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Go ahead to state your name and affiliation and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Aves Thompson, Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide organization representing the interests of our nearly 200 member companies. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 345. One of the pressing problems in our industry today is to find qualified drivers for commercial vehicles that we use to deliver freight. As you all know, if you got it, a truck brought it. We spend a lot of time and effort recruiting and retaining good drivers. The regulatory bar has been raised in the past few years to further increase the professionalism of drivers in our industry. When someone says he or she is just a truck driver, they miss the mark completely. Truck driving is a profession that requires a great deal of in-depth knowledge of the regulations, as well as driving skills to navigate a large rig through our highway system. Alaska has some of the best drivers in the nation. They become outstanding drivers through training, experience, and their own enlightened self-interest, because sometimes their own driving skill can very well save their own lives as or the lives of others. As an industry, we welcome our returning veterans and appreciate this opportunity to do something to support them as well as to help ourselves. With the proper certification as to a veteran's experience, we support waiving the skills test for the issuance of a commercial driver's license. As a veteran myself, and on behalf of our members, we are proud to support House Bill 345 and urge that you pass this bill out of committee with due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I don't see any questions. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Is there anyone else online? Okay, we'll close public testimony then. What are the wishes of the committee? Any committee discussion at all? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And this is just kind of a question maybe for the record. The similarity between military vehicles and private vehicles, is there a correlation between a big rig? Do they have the capabilities of driving that? I know your bill provides that they have to have similar experience, but are they instantly going to be able to come in and drive what I'd consider an 18-wheeler or a big rig? Is there a correlation with the military driver? Do they drive anything like that, I guess, is the question.
Fair question. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the military drivers, to the extent of my knowledge, there's a wide range of vehicles they drive, from the Jeeps to the Humvees, the Hess, to fuel Bowsers, the Strikers, to the large lowboys that are what you might traditionally consider an 18-wheeler. Yes, there is a correlation, and there's a wide range. I would say, to be fair, that on the smaller vehicles, there has been a move since the 80s and 90s to go towards automatic transmissions, and that's not the... a lot of commercial vehicles are standard transmissions, and so there might be a small lag time when a commercial driver, a military driver, transitioning to commercial might have to pick up the endorsement to use the standard transmission.
Okay.
But
thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. What are the wishes of the committee? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would move House Bill 345, I believe we're working with the A version, if I'm correct, from committee with, I believe it's a zero fiscal note, and personal recommendations.
All right. Hearing no objections, so moved. And let the record show that Representative Munoz has joined us, and we'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. Whatever. Okay, we are now going to hear House Bill 212, Version B. And Representative Millett, would you please come forward, state your name and your affiliation, and explain your bill.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I represent House District 30 in Anchorage. And thank you to Chairman Wilson and the members of the committee for hearing this bill. This is a unique bill. I'm not going to present it to you today. It was a bill that was brought to me by request of a young student in my district named Jessica Lucan. She's 18. She's a senior. She's homeschooled. She brought this to me during her close-up trip last year. Part of her program, and she'll explain it to you, was to identify a problem and come up with a solution and introduce legislation, which both I helped and Senator Meyer helped with. And what you see before you is a product of all of Jessica's hard work. I did very little on this bill except to guide her through the process, work with Ledge Legal, and give her advice on you know, the process that we'll go through. So, Madam Chair, if we could let Jessica present the bill, I am perfectly willing and capable to operate the laptop.
Okay. All right. Is Jessica
she's on
here?
The line.
Oh, she's online. Okay. Jessica, are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead and state your name and your affiliation and your how this bill was originated, and I guess maybe that is included in your presentation.
Yes, ma'am. For the record, my name is Jessica Lucan, and I'm representing myself. I'd like to begin by thanking the committee for allowing me to testify on behalf of House Bill 212, and I'd also like to thank Representative Sharice Miller and her staff for assisting me in making my project possible. A little over a year ago in February 2011, I had the opportunity to take part in a program called Juno Close Up. The homework beforehand included learning about state and local government, along with presenting a project or idea to our state representative and senator. The product of that project is now House Bill 212. Moving on to slide 2. This shows the cause of death amongst teenagers between 1999 and 2006. I'd like to point out that out of the 48% of unintentional injuries, 73% of that is motor vehicle traffic accidents. Moving on to the third slide, these are the Alaska statistics for drivers ages 14 to 16 in 2004 to 2008. Out of the fatal crashes and the fatal injuries, the numbers were highest in 2008. I'd also like to point out that if you compute the average numbers of minor injury crashes, major injury crashes, minor injuries, and major injuries, the averages will be higher than the numbers stated in 2008. This means that although it may seem that the numbers are declining, on average they remain the same. Moving on to the fifth slide, these are some more Alaska statistics for drivers ages 16 to 17 between 2002 and 2011. I'd like to point out that this slide shows the age and percentages of drivers involved in crashes between 2002 and 2011, but there isn't any information on the effects that the crashes had on the occupants and passengers of the other vehicle and the effects that it would have on the public. Moving on to the next slide. Provisional license drivers. Provisional license drivers are hazardous due to apprehension. Novice drivers are more likely to be nervous due to the fact that they are driving by themselves for the first time. Lack of experience. Many young drivers are known to lack sound judgment because of the lack of experience on the road. Weather conditions. Rain, snow, and ice, but a few examples of Alaska's diverse weather conditions. Alaska has no driver's education requirements. Alaska is diverse from other states. Alaska is known for the vast differences that it has from other states. We have one of the most dangerous roads in America, midnight fishing runs, and we are constantly on the lookout for wildlife. Moving on, here is my proposed solution. A person holding a provisional driver's license shall display in the rear window of each vehicle operated by the person a sticker issued by the department that identifies the vehicle that is operated by a provisional licensee. This is only one example of a similar bill that passed in New Jersey. Teen drivers with their learner's permit and provisional license are required to display a red decal on the back of their license plate. Similar laws are implemented in New Jersey, British Columbia, Newfoundland, Yukon, and other countries like Australia and England. Moving on, here are a few examples of what stickers look like in other places that it is implemented. In Canada, a learner's permit holder uses an L and an N during their equivalent provisional stage. Australia is almost the same, but for the exception of a T during the initial provisional stage. As you can see in the bottom right-hand corner, even the sovereign, Prince William and Catherine, are no exception to abide by British law. Moving on to the next slide. Why this solution? This is a simple solution to benefit Alaskan drivers. It will impress other drivers to be more cautious while driving around the novice teen driver. It will provide the other drivers the information necessary to understand the provisional licensee's position, and this will assist law enforcement officers in implementing the law. In the next slide, this is a suggested enforcement. As the bill states, failure to display a sticker as required by this subsection is an infraction and may be punished by a fine not more than $300. The enforcement of the bill will impress young drivers on how imperative it is to have a sticker on the back of their vehicle. Moving on to the next slide, here are the suggested procedures. The state of Alaska will supply the Department of the Motor Vehicles with stickers to distribute to those persons acquiring a provisional license. Those acquiring a provisional license will pay for the sticker as part of the permitting process. The sticker will be placed in the rear window of their operating vehicle. Moving on. In summary, teen drivers with their provisional license are statistically more hazardous to themselves than other Alaskans. I suggest that we require provisional drivers to identify their status and reduce the number of accidents and infractions in Alaska. Thank you again for your time and for allowing me to testify before this committee. Do you have any questions?
Okay, thank you very much, Jessica.
Do you want me to get the light?
Yeah, go ahead. Anybody, any questions for Jessica? Jessica, I have a question. Now, it says failure to display a sticker as required by this subsection is an infraction and may be published by a fine of not more than $300. So, this would allow the troopers or policemen to stop anybody that looks like they're younger than 17?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, in the bill, I don't know what version you have, but there is an amendment that was made in state affairs that amended it for secondary stops, which means if they haven't had a previous infraction while they're driving, then the police officer can't pull them over.
So we're going to put something, a bill in place that can't be enforced?
Not completely, no.
Okay. Representative Munoz, or I'm sorry, Millett.
Thank you.
This is one of those days.
Madam Chair, the secondary offense is similar to the seatbelt. We had a secondary offense on the seatbelt. So there's a primary stop for a primary cause and then a secondary stop. So this would fall under the secondary. So if, you know, we don't want to create a situation where the police are just pulling over, you know, my son is 30, he looks like he's 15. And so we don't, you know, we don't want to create an environment where they're just being pulled over for issues that probably aren't the real reason to pull them over for.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Representative Feige has joined us. I don't know when you came in. I didn't see you. So, Representative Grunberg.
Yes, to answer the chair's question, that was my amendment in state affairs. And the reason I offered it was because in the debate on the bill, there had been some concern about people using this really minor thing as an excuse to pull a young driver over, and then they'd be able to search the car or whatever there was, potentially, and you know, that just seemed. Normally, I agree with the chair that things should be primary offensive, but this just seemed sufficiently minor that I thought this was an appropriate thing to do. There wasn't any objection to the amendment, and that's why I offered it.
Well, and I must say, just to make myself clear, I do not believe putting a bill on the, you know, out in the world that we can't enforce. So that's just a stance that I've always taken. So,
may I respond to that point?
Representative Grunberg.
I think you can enforce this.
Only if they're doing something else wrong.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, well, in two cases. In case one, if they're doing somebody else wrong. But if there's an accident, let's say there's an accident and a law enforcement official comes upon the accident. And let's say there are two cars in the accident, and it's the scene where, you know, they're already stopped. And car one has rear-ended car two, and car one's clearly at fault and is sighted. Car two, though, would contain a provisional driver and not a sticker. In that case, there was cause for the officer to be there. So even though the driver in car two was not at fault, there would be sufficient cause to issue the citation.
I think almost always when somebody rear-ends somebody else, it's their fault.
No, I'm talking about right. I'm talking about the first car, the car that's the victim. So in that kind of a situation, a citation could be issued because there would be cause for the police to be there, even though there was clearly no fault on the other guy.
Yes, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have some concerns about this. And the first one I want to state is, does everyone recall in Florida a number of years ago when the rental car companies had stickers on them that designated them as tourists, and there were people tracking down tourists and shooting them, and they would pick on them because the cars, and Florida forced them to take those off. There was quite a shooting where the woman was killed and the man wasn't, and they were targeted, and these groups were going around targeting the rental cars. And my concern is, are we targeting or giving an opportunity for nefarious people to target people under the age of 18 who may not have the experience? And so I just don't want to paint a big target on kids' cars, saying, I'm young, I'm vulnerable, attack me. So I have that concern. And then I also, the same argument you hear every time we have a bill like this, it's not the state's job to be parents. And I just can't support a piece of legislation that, makes us more of a nanny state, more of a nanny state. The concept is good. You know, I understand that young drivers have less experience, but I still think that, you know, the state should not step into the role of parents. So those are the two concerns I have, and I don't know how you can address the one where we paint a big bullseye on the back of a car saying, I'm young. So the other one is just a personal thing.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
May I respond? I can't let that go by non-responding.
Imagine that.
How about a handicap sticker? Handicap people are even more vulnerable than youth. Are we not putting a big H on their target?
Well, I certainly appreciate that, but that's also so that they get privileged parking. That's not just a function driving up and down the street. There's privileged parking involved with that. There are other things that sticker denotes other than just I'm 16 to 17, here I am. So there's a different area. And the other thing is that's a voluntary program. You don't have to get a handicap sticker. I had an option to get one. I actually have one for my knee surgery. I didn't have to get it. No one who's handicapped has to get it. That's a voluntary program. I don't see anywhere in here where this says it's a voluntary program.
May I respond to that?
Representative Grunberg.
Since we seem to be volleying.
we should move closer.
with respect to the first issue, which was there are certain other reasons for having a handicap sticker, for example, parking. Here, there are other reasons for having this provisional sticker, whatever it's going to be. And that is for other people to be aware that we're dealing with a relatively inexperienced driver, and people should be maybe a little more vigilant than they would be when one of us was driving. So I think in both cases, it serves to protect the driver.
Madam, and if I might respond to that, what's our next step? If someone has a DWI, we start putting a big D on their car so we can be aware that they drink while they drive, so that we can make other people aware of every little thing that's going on in the car? There's certainly, Madam Chair, you're killing me. At what point, does the scarlet letter cause anyone to have a better standard or a different standard? Is this going to make a young teen drive better because they've got a sticker on their car? Is this going to educate them to a better extent, or is this just going to be a identifier?
Well,
okay, that's enough. Okay.
Hey, wait, I didn't.
Jessica, are you? Has this fact been brought up in any other committee yet about a possible target? And I am concerned about that because young, innocent girls are, this is what I'm thinking of here, and so it's something I had not thought of. Had that been brought up before?
Madam Chair, it hasn't been brought up in any of the committees, but I have been considering that factor. Honestly, I haven't been able to obtain any facts, but in the end, you know, any sexual predator or anyone who wants to target young women or young teenagers, in the end, can target them anyway. A 20-year-old might look like a 16-year-old, and they can pull up next to them and then pretend to pull them over, you know, in any instance. So although it may seem that it might be a target, in the end, you're going to still have predators nonetheless.
Okay, so that's not anything that makes you fearful at all?
Madam Chair, can I respond to Representative Munoz?
Or
Millet. No, I think Representative Johnson brings up a good point, but I'll also point out in the bill, it's a removable sticker, so you can take it out and take it in with you so your cars aren't sitting. You know, DMV is coming up with either it's a static cling or it's a suction cup sticker that you can take off when you're done driving the car. That way, when you're not, most families have two cars, so if a young person is driving their dad's car, they can move the sticker. If it's their mom's car, they can move the sticker. And the other point that I wanted to make, and we had talked about this in State Affairs, was one of the things that we denote when we have a student driver is we put a student driver sign, much like the one that you see up on the screen now. We put those on student driver cars, so we're aware as drivers, as experienced drivers, to give them, you know, broad range of the road, to be cautious, not to cut them off, not stop suddenly. So those are things that we do with student drivers when they're going through their student driver training. Not all children get to do, or kids that are driving, teenagers, get the opportunity to go through student driving. So while it's not student driving, but it does give them the responsibility, one, that they need to go through a checklist of things before they get in a car and drive as new drivers. They need to make sure that they have their driver's license with them, proof of insurance. They need to have the provisional stickers with them. Those are things that we're teaching new drivers in responsibility. And we're not targeting them. We're not being a nanny state. We're just letting them know that the responsibility to drive is not a right. It's something, it's a privilege. It's a privilege that you have to earn, and you have to be a responsible driver. And that just adds to the checklist of things. When a new driver gets in the car, the brake lights work, the headlights work, I've got my license on me, I've got my provisional sticker in the window. So I think that we're not providing a nanny state. What we're doing is we're building drivers into good drivers, new drivers that possibly may not take driving as seriously as we'd like them to take it. Driving is a responsibility. It is a weapon. A car is a weapon. It can be used to kill people. So I think the seriousness of driving, the provisional sticker, just adds an emphasis to young drivers, and that's where you have to make your emphasis, is on a young driver. It would be difficult for you to make me put a provisional license. I know what driving is, but I've been driving for 25 years. I've been in accidents. I know what a car is capable of. So I think that was the intent, not to become a nanny state, but just to reinforce that you're a new driver, to give you wide opportunity on the road, to let other drivers know that you may stop suddenly, you may turn suddenly, you may do things that you wouldn't do if you were driving a car for 20 years. So, but I understand your concerns about the nanny state. I believe very much like you believe. So, I think it's something that's worth the discussion to have. I know that one of the things that I found out just haphazardly is Greece. has the same provision, except their letter is very big. I mean, it's pretty much fills up the back of a window for their new drivers, and it's one of the reasons the roads in Greece are steep and they're small and they're tiny, and so it's under the same guise of, as what we're, or what Jessica is trying to do here, is not to make drivers feel bad because they're new drivers, but give them the enforcement that they need and the responsibility they need when they get into a car to understand driving is important. It's a right you have to take very seriously.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Hi, Jessica. Hi, Jessica. Hey, congratulations with your work on this project. I think you're finding that it's even with issues that are pretty straightforward, they can become difficult at times to get through the process. But a couple of questions. Have you looked at what other states are doing, and do we have examples of this program in other states? And also, I was trying to find a fiscal note. I see it's referred to finance, and I was wondering if there was a fiscal note or not.
To the chair, to Representative Nunes, there is no fiscal note, and so we're trying to get it waived through House Finance because, like I said before, there's no finance involved. To your other question, the only other state that has implemented this law is New Jersey, and there was an example back in my presentation that kind of showed what that was, and I can find that slide for you. But New Jersey uses a red decal on the back of their vehicles on their license plates. I know that some other states are trying to implement this as well. I don't know, I can't give you the state names right now because I don't have it before me, but I know that there is legislation in those state legislatures trying to get this bill passed as well.
Okay, and Jessica, just so you know, there is a fiscal note. It's a zero fiscal note, but there is a fiscal note with it. And that's just a, I know you probably think that if it's zero, that means it's not a fiscal note, but it really is. But we consider that a zero fiscal note. So, okay. And are you there?
Yes, I am. Good luck with your project.
Thank you.
And Representative Feige has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I arrived kind of mid-presentation here, so maybe this was addressed. I'm looking at the sponsor statement, and it talks about teen drivers accounting for 20% of the fatalities, and that in order to reduce the number of accidents, we're going to put the sticker on the back of the car. For either the sponsor or for Jessica up there, how is putting the sticker, what is the logic that says putting the sticker is going to reduce the number of accidents?
Jessica, you can answer that.
Yes, ma'am. To the chair, to Representative, the reason behind that is if somebody sees a provisional license driver on the road, they'll take more precautions. You know, whether they're speeding around the provisional license driver or trying to hurry them through a stoplight or tailing them, in the end, I believe that it will prevent accidents happening in Alaska. And honestly, you can't prevention can't be measured. You know, we won't know how effective the sticker is because it's new in New Jersey. It's only been implemented for about a year and a half. So the statistics aren't there, but like I said before, prevention can't be measured, so we can't know how many accidents it will save. But in the end, when thinking about it and going through the reasoning and the logic, people will take more precautions when they're around the novice drivers.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jessica. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to my vice chair just for a second, and I'll be right back.
Okay, we're going to go, we have someone else online here that would like to testify. They're with DMV, Whitney Brewster. Whitney, are you there? And if you are, please state your name as well as your affiliation and make any kind of testimony that you have for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster. I'm the Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. I just wanted to point out how the DMV would implement this program.
We clearly would distribute the provisional stickers when we issue the provisional license. There is a minor fee associated with producing the stickers, but it's not so significant that we included it in a fiscal note. In the research that we did, we looked at various different decals. The committee touched on this topic briefly earlier, that we're looking at a static cling type sticker. It's a low-cost option, and it would allow the decal to be moved between vehicles. The cost of that is approximately 20 cents a decal, and with currently we have 6,251 provisional licenses on the street. So implementing the program at the DMV would be less than $1,000 a year, and it'd be just an inexpensive and fairly easy program to administer at the DMV. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee members have.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Whitney, will these be luminescent so in the dark you'll be able to see them?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I had not considered that. I appreciate you bringing it up. We would clearly want it to be visible by law enforcement if that is and those that are operating on the roadway around the provisional driver. So, that is certainly something that we would consider. We would work with law enforcement in the development of the decal. I can tell you that for certain, and would want it to be visible to them and make sure that it is indeed visible.
And do you have any idea what that'll add to the cost?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, no, I do not. I can look into that and get back to the committee.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, if I might, a glow-in-the-dark sticker is just going to make it that much more of a target.
I need to respond.
There's a surprise. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Whitney, I was just remembering a conversation that took place in the State Affairs Committee when we were dealing with this bill. And there was talk about whether it might be better to put the stickers on the back of the vehicle instead of the back of the window because there was fear that the sticker could be scraped off, scraping frosted windows off in the wintertime. Would you suggest that we amend this bill so it would be stuck on the vehicle itself instead of on the rear window?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I would suggest that the bill is left fairly broad to allow the DMV some discretion to kind of look at different ways to adhere a static cling sticker to a vehicle, particularly in Alaska in the winter. There is some concern with it being on the outside of the vehicle. I can say that with assuredness. We have young people. You put it on the outside of the vehicle, it can likely be removed as a prank. And so I think it would be the DMV's preference to keep the language broad enough so that we could try out different scenarios to come up with the best solution.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Whitney. Just a real quick question. It says in here that the department may charge a fee for the issuance of the sticker. What would you expect that fee potentially to be?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that initially, because of the low-cost amount of the decal, the DMV at least initially would not be charging if for some reason it became cost prohibitive to just allow the issuance of these free of charge. The bill allows future directors to implement through regulation a fee structure. But I can say during my tenure, I don't believe that it would be so much that we would actually charge the customer.
Thank you.
Whitney, how long do drivers have to with the provisional license? How long is that?
Madam Chairman, it is dependent upon when the individual initially gets their provisional license. An individual has to have held a valid instruction permit for a minimum of 6 months before they can even apply for the provisional license. And they have to be traffic violation free to be able to graduate to the provisional license. At that point, they have to have the provisional license for another 6 months traffic violation free before they can graduate into an unrestricted license. Once they hit, so technically at 16 and a half, someone could graduate to an unrestricted license. As of age 18, at that age, the provisional requirements are no longer applicable.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Groomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I ask Jesse a question, please?
Yes, go ahead, Representative Groomberg.
Jesse, you still on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. On the sheet that you gave out, I gave you, Representative Munoz, I gave you my sheet, where you talked about the other state laws on the subject. I note that, I don't know if everybody on the committee got this, but you have from Missouri, New Jersey, and Ohio. Do Missouri and Ohio also have similar laws?
I haven't done the research. I've done a little bit, but I haven't found the research that you're looking for. I can get back to you on that if you'd like, but I don't believe any other state are implementing this law.
Oh, okay, because it said it was provided by NCSL. I don't know who distributed it, but anyway, thank you.
Okay, Jessica?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Rep. Wilson, and what I'm going to do, just a second, I'm going to check to see if there's anybody else that would like to testify. Is there anybody online that would like to testify? Anybody in the room? Jessica, I'm not going to close testimony today, and the reason I'm not is because I had never thought before about the possibility of someone maybe targeting young girls. And I think that because of that, I would like personally to ask some parents how they feel about this. And in the meantime, if you can do a little homework and find out those other two states and what they actually are doing, and get back with us, and I will check with some parents because this is a concern for me, and so I'm going to hold the bill, and you can get your information, and I'll get my information. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, and this is directed to Jessica. Jessica, thank you so much for working on this. It's so important that. It's so important that you get involved, and just because I may seem to be your adversary in this, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work you've done on it and the thought that's gone into it, and encourage you to continue to work on this, and maybe we can come to some kind of agreement that we can all live with. But I did want to thank you for your hard effort, and I know this is not easy and sometimes intimidating, but I appreciate your effort and encourage you to continue along these lines.
And Jessica, I think you've done a real good job. We even have experienced people that don't know the rules, and you have gone through the chair, and you need to really be proud that you have gotten you got yourself pulled together pretty good for this, and so we really do appreciate that. So thank you very much.
And thank you. Madam Chair, is there any way that I could make some closing comments?
Sure.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'd just like to explain a little bit why student driving is so important to me, and I think this might make some understanding a little bit better. 6 years ago, while my father was deployed, my family and I were involved in a head-on car collision caused by a teen driver. I believe I have a few photos in the PowerPoint that were not provided in your handout. If there's any way to get to those photos.
Yes,
we have
them before us, Jessica.
Yes, those are photos taken after my family and I were pulled out of the accident, and it's truly a miracle that my family survived. I feel like it's my responsibility to advocate for safe teen driving. And I understand that no bill is perfect. In the end, it comes down to the benefit outweighing the cost. Honestly, in this case, I believe that the cost will be someone's life and the benefit will be saving lives. And I'd like you to know I understand your concerns, and I'd like to thank you for your questions. They taught me to do more research into it, and I'd like to make this bill safe for Alaskans and advocate for safe teen driving. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Jessica. And we do have some amendments before us, and let's go ahead and look at the amendments. And so,
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
These would be offered on behalf of the bill sponsors, not a member of the committee. But I'm just wondering, if you're thinking of doing work on the body of the bill, I can either offer them today and then we get a CS, or alternatively, you may want to do that work before we do these. Is it your pleasure that we do these today?
Let's go ahead and do these today, and from what I find out, I might not be that concerned about it, but I do want to ask some parents.
Okay.
And let's go ahead and like to make a motion for amendment number one?
Yes. And these were done in conjunction with Representative Millett, and are really on behalf of her. The first amendment is labeled conceptual amendment number one, and on page one, line five, following A, we would insert the word movable. So it would be operated, I'm sorry, it would be a movable sticker, we took this, frankly, from the language in the Senate bill. I don't know if it should be, if I can say that. I guess I can say that.
You can't in committee, you have to say.
Okay.
Or representative.
It says movable. I don't know if it should be removable. And I would ask, we have Mr. Lockup here, and if we could ask, should it be movable or should it be removable?
Okay, now just a second. Let's ask that question first, so why don't you come forward and we'll...
Madam Chair, if I might add, you might even be transferable.
Yes. Yes.
There's several words at work.
Sure.
Yes. Thought you were going to get out of it, didn't you?
For the record, my name's Jerry Luckup, Assistant Revisor of Statutes for you guys, the Alaska Legislature. The Senate went with movable and the Senate version of this bill. It doesn't really matter to me either way. We debated in-house removable or immovable, and we felt movable was just fine.
Okay. I guess if objection.
Representative Grunberg.
I have moved the amendment. I assume
you haven't moved it yet.
No. You haven't moved it.
I didn't? Okay. I move conceptual amendment number one.
All right.
For discussion.
Okay.
Can I ask him?
Representative Pruitt.
Jerry, should instead of it being sticker, should it be decal?
again, through the chair, Representative Pruitt. We debated this too at times, and felt since it has to stick, we felt sticker doesn't necessarily mean something that has adhesive on it. We felt it conveyed a concept that it has to be affixed. And decal would work too. It's basically half a dozen of one and six of another. And, you know, we had this debate as the as we were drafting this bill originally of how to do it.
And my thoughts are for that. I would rather, if that works, I would rather not change it because then it would be different from the Senate bill, and then we would have to go into a conference or something, and I would rather not have to do that if we move the bill. And so I'd rather not change it to make it different from the Senate bill for that reason. Representative Grunberg.
If I may, we had a considerable discussion about this in state affairs, and Ms. Brewster, who I hope is still on the line, said she would like to keep the wording being sticker. Could we ask Ms. Brewster her views, please?
Whitney, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles, again. I think Mr. Luckup hit the nail on the head. I think by calling it a sticker, anything that allows the decal or the sticker to be affixed to the vehicle is broad enough. The term sticker is broad enough to allow for multiple different options.
Whitney, I was envisioning in my mind that you'd have a little suction cup with a hook on it, so you could just hook that sticker on and off whenever you went from one car to the other. So if that works for you, it works for me. So, okay.
I wouldn't buy objection. I really don't have an objection to it. I just wanted to
ask.
Hi. If it means sticker, you could put gum on it. I mean.
Okay. Okay. The objection has been removed. And not hearing anything else, conceptual amendment number one has passed. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, on behalf of the bill sponsor and to conform with the Senate version, I would offer conceptual amendment number two, which changes $300 on page one, line eight, to $200.
I object myself to that. And the reason I object is because I think it needs to be substantial for teenagers to really think about this. Because I think a parent would say, if you better watch it because you're the one that's going to pay for this and not me, you know. And so I really hate to put it down to 200. I don't know. Any other discussion? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And remembering back to the days in black and white TV when I was a teenager, $200 was a lot of money. And I think even nowadays, for a teenager, $200 is a lot of money.
Representative Johnson.
I think that's a pair of a cost of a new pair of Air Jordans.
Mm-hmm. New pair of what?
Air Jordans.
Oh.
Yep. I know kids nowadays that just hand their parents just hand it out pretty fast.
Wow. Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And this is a question that probably to Jerry. Is there any provision, I mean, you know, we're talking about suction cup stickers, movable, transferable, all kinds of stuff. Is there anything in this bill that says if it accidentally falls off the window, that it doesn't adhere or you've moved it so many times that their static cling part of it is not good or the windshield or the suction cup is cold and it doesn't stick, that if it falls down that there's, I mean, is there anything that says you are get out of jail card free, so to speak, that says I put it on, it's right there on the back seat, and if that is the case, then why don't the kids just throw their sticker in the back seat?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, there's one get out of jail free card in the bill. Your first offense, don't get, if you show proof that you've either now affixed the sticker in your vehicle, or if you didn't get the sticker and you've gone and got and received the sticker at DMV, all you have to do is show that to the court and your fine is waived. So that's one occasion. If in other occasions you expect the the siting officer to, I would assume, to exercise some discretion, just like we do with regards to, for example, the tabs on your license plates. I actually had that tab come off. It seems like it's impossible, but if you don't clean the old ones off real well, which I didn't one time, and the tab came off, and it was here in town, and I think knowing the officer might have helped a little too, but I actually had an occasion where that occurred, and the officer didn't cite me, even though technically it was a violation. I think if the officer sees the sticker there, and you know, it might be something he inquires, that try to stick it on the vehicle and the stickiness is gone or something like that, I would assume the officer wouldn't cite, but there's no guarantee that that would occur.
Madam Chair, I want to point out a discrepancy in what we're talking about in that. You did have a registration that said it had been renewed.
Correct.
With you. Is the teen driver going to have something that says, I purchased my sticker and it just not happened to be there? So
that might, through the chair, Representative Johnson, that might be a question to address to Ms. Brewster.
Well, I actually would like to ask Jessica. Jessica, if that happened, how do you think a teenager is going to prove that they affixed the sticker?
Madam Chair, I'm not exactly sure how. I believe Ms. Brewster might be able to answer that. My suggestion would be that DMVU would keep a record, just like they keep a record that they obtained their provisional license. That would be my suggestion, but I don't have a completely full answer for you on that one.
Madam Chair.
Okay. And I'm thinking of possibly mom sees Jennifer put the sticker on their car when she leaves the driveway. When she gets around the corner, she stops and takes it off. And so mom can say, oh, I saw her put it on, but that doesn't mean that it stayed on more than a block away. And I'm just saying that we all know that that could happen with some people. And now, I'm not saying everybody, but it definitely could happen.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when we heard this bill in another committee, Lieutenant Dial, who has testified in front of this committee on several occasions, said that the way that it would work if the sticker was not on the provisional driver's car, that if they brought the vehicle in and showed them that they had the sticker on, that they would, that would be their first get out of jail and only get out of jail free, quote, card for this violation. And there could be numerous reasons why it may not have been on there. It may have fallen off. A sibling may have been driving the car and taken it off, and they hadn't checked to make sure it had been stuck back on. There were many reasons that we went through that may cause the sticker to have been removed. And as long as they, it would be similar to, say, if you had a headlight out and you had to fix your equipment and go in and show the police that you had gotten it fixed. That was the example that the officer.
Lieutenant Dial, are you online?
Madam Chairman, I am online, and for the record, this is Rodney Dial, Lieutenant with the State Troopers.
Okay.
And did you want me to comment on that aspect?
Please, and on anything else, any other questions that you've heard us batting around here, if you have a comment, please go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair. The Department is officially neutral on this bill. However, as we envision it, we would treat the first violation as a correctable citation, for lack of a better word, where they were supposed to have the decal. They indicated that they obtained the decal, and for whatever reason it wasn't on there. They'd be issued a correctable citation, and they would have to come to their local state trooper post, municipal police department, and just show proof of that, and then the citation would be dismissed. Because it is a secondary offense, our ability to enforce it would be limited. We would run across these occasionally through traffic context
contacts for different reasons. Other than that, I'm available for any questions.
How do you feel about possible targeting of young girls?
Madam Chairman, we've really not considered that aspect. I really don't know how to respond to that. I don't believe that would be a significant concern. We don't see a lot of targeting of specific groups of people who are out on our highways at the current time.
Okay, thank you. Representative Pruitt.
And this question may actually be for Jerry. It says in here that they, to get rid of the violation, they'd have to produce in court proof. Is that the same thing as going to your local station? I mean, does court mean they actually have to go to set up a court date and go to court to try to prove that, to get it on?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt. It's dealt with that way. Often, most of these correctable tickets will be dealt with by law enforcement in that manner. If the law enforcement officer chooses not to, this provides that you can always go to court and get it rectified that in that manner.
So
in some cases, you may not be able to, you know, for example, if the ticket was given to someone while they were up in Fairbanks for a sports competition and now they're back down in Anchorage, it may not be convenient for them to return to the local law enforcement at that point. They can always take care of it through proof through the court system. It's not exactly, to answer your question, it's not exactly the same thing, but these correctable tickets are dealt with often by law enforcement in that manner, as described.
I just want to make sure that the wording didn't require every time to set up a court date, that they could do what Lieutenant Dial is mentioning. Thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. I have a question. Did the Senate consider making this permissible, may instead of shall, and then taking out the provisions for charging a fee and the compliance issues with the court? Was there any discussion of that?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I wasn't there for the Senate hearing, but I'm not sure. You might want to address that question to Jessica to see how she feels about the idea of making it May. If it's May, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of juvenile drivers that would want to put the sticker in the window. Their parents may want them to, but if it was me, I probably would not voluntarily do this.
That's true. That's true.
If you drive without your sticker on your tags.
Do we have any other questions?
Oh, Ms. Madam Chair.
Representative Burns.
I would just say I think we got away a little bit from the question of Amendment Number 2, except for your comment. And since this was an amendment that was put in the other body, not in the State Affairs, I would like to get the view of the sponsor and maybe Ms. Lucan, Jessica, on how they would view the importance of the amendment. Would they prefer to leave it at 300 or get to 200? And I would just remind you of your earlier comment, not wanting to go to a conference committee, although if this bill passed to the Senate, they could recede. You know, we've got a ways to go. But I'd like to hear from the sponsor and Jessica.
Okay, Jessica? Do you hear what we're saying?
Yes, I do.
And where do you?
In Senate State Affairs, I believe there is concern over the fact that there was such a high fee of $300. In the bill, it says a fee not exceeding $300, and the fine would be set by the Supreme Court. So there was an amendment made to reduce the fee to $200, and like I said before, the charge for not abiding by this law would not that would be set by the Supreme Court. So the fee shouldn't exceed $200, according to Senate Bill 132.
Okay. And not more than $300. So it could be even $100.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I'd like to hear from
you. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Millett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a preference on the fee. The cap out is a $300 fee on the Supreme Court sets a fee schedule. So $300 is the most they could charge. I will tell you, my son had illegal tint on his window, unbeknownst to me. It was a $50 ticket. So I think the fee schedule is set by public safety, and they would, you know, in their scope of regulation writing, they would deem whatever they feel fit. Like I said, the first one's a fix-it ticket, just like not carrying your insurance card. You don't have your insurance card, you just go down and show you have insurance, and there's no charge on the first time you do that. It's just designed the same way as a fix-it ticket. And the fee schedule, I think, you know, if you decide 300 is, you want to keep the cap at the top at 300, I'm fine with that. At 200, it's just one of the suggestions that came out of some conversations with, you know, the pocketbooks of teenagers. So, but you're right, Air Jordan's $200.
Madam Chair, on that, if we could ask Mr. Lockup to come back for a minute. I believe that this is set in an administrative court rule, but I'm not sure, and maybe he could, just so we have it on the record, who does it.
Okay, Representative, or go ahead, Mr. Lockup.
The Chair, Representative Brunberg, there would be a bail forfeiture amount set by the Supreme Court. They receive input from DPS administration. I'm not sure how much input, but basically the way the system works is every movable violation there is out there, including when we've got bail forfeiture schedules for everything, state park tickets and other things, but the Supreme Court will set a bail forfeiture amount. And so when you get issued a ticket, you can either pay the amount of money, which is the bail forfeiture amount that the court sets, which is something less than the maximum fine for the offense usually, or you can go to court. You can show up in court. Everyone has their day in court if they want to on that violation. And then the court can sentence you to anything. Usually the court's not going to give you more than the bail forfeiture amount anyway, but it's possible. The reason I selected $300 for this in drafting this is that's the amount that we set for motor vehicle infractions. The Alaska State Legislature has set that amount as the maximum for an infraction, and that's a non-criminal offense. It doesn't imply criminality. It's not like a misdemeanor or a felony or anything like that. It's considered non-criminal. It's dealt with in the criminal court system. So it would be up the court to set an amount. And in the back of the court rules volume, there's a list that lists all these offenses, speeding and stop sign violation and parking in a loading zone, things like that are all listed and all have amounts scheduled for the fine. And that usually it's, you know, it's the court basically tries to look at the seriousness of the offense and match it with how it fits on that schedule with all the other offenses that are out there.
Okay, is there any other discussion on this amendment? Representative Grunberg.
Yes. Rather than withdrawing the amendment, I'm going to continue to offer it with due respect to the chair. The reason being that this is an infraction that will be paid by a young person. It's not paid by an adult. And at least in my family, the young people, they're older now, but when they were young, they didn't have $200. Now, I realize my kids are 99 years old. No, they're not quite that old, 25 and 41. But for something like this, I just think it's a little more humane to do the 200. So with all due respect, I will continue to offer the amendment.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay, I will not remove my objection, so would you, the Secretary, call the roll?
Okay, we restate the motion, please.
The motion is the conceptual amendment number 2 changes on page 1, line 8, it deletes 300 and inserts 200.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Madam Secretary?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
No.
Representative Munoz? Yes. Representative Feige?
No.
Chair Wilson?
No.
48, 48. Okay, the amendment has passed. Okay, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, jeez.
Said that last time, too.
Come on, Gunberg.
Okay, this is an amendment that is similar to an amendment that was drafted in the other body. I don't know, Charisse, was this actually offered in the other body?
Madam Chair.
I'm going to move the amendment. I guess I have to.
Representative Millet. Millet.
Madam Chair, I think I have to offer it. Somebody has
I'm just
to.
Going to ask her the question.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That amendment came about in a conversation that I've had with some rural legislators that have concern. There are communities throughout the state of Alaska that have less than 5 miles of road, that have maybe 20 cars in their village, that have no village public safety officers. So to go through the exercise of having an exemption for those villages that already receive exemptions for, let's say, registration. There's a lot of villages in rural Alaska have exemptions, and Jerry can probably run through the list of exemptions that we have, or Whitney could run through the list of exemptions that we have for rural Alaska. Not having to take a CDL test, not having to take the actual driving portion of a driver's test. We exempt a lot of rural communities from those provisions of our driver's license bills. So this would be following those exemptions of not making it a part of the law in those communities.
They don't have to register their cars?
I think it's mm-hmm. not. It's a theory. Can probably tell you the registration.
Costs a lot of money to go to town to do it, or to go to a DMV office.
Whitney can probably explain the exemptions that this falls under the same.
And I think they have different provisional licenses too.
They do. They have through the chair. They have different levels of restrictions on the driver's license that they can be waived from. Also, I was surprised when I looked at what we exempt rural Alaska from. But there are legitimate reasons why you would exempt a small community of less than 500 people with less than 2 miles of road from having registration on your car. You don't have a DMV. There's not DMV locations in every village. There's not someone that can give a road test in every village. There's no one to pull you over in some of the villages. So I think that it falls in line with some of the other exemptions that we've offered. And I think Whitney could probably do a lot more eloquent job of explaining that than I can.
Okay.
Do you want me to offer the amendment?
No. Whitney? Would you go ahead and tell us what those exemptions are before we...
Yes, Madam Chair. There are exemptions throughout AS 28 when it comes to rural exemptions. The first is in 2810-011, and that is an exemption from registration requirements. And the criteria for being considered rural is used the same in each of these exemptions, and it is that the community is not connected to the land connected state highway system, or they have a highway or vehicular way with an average daily traffic volume greater than 499. So if they, and those numbers are measured by the Department of Transportation. So if they are not connected to the road system, or they have a daily traffic volume of 499 or less, they are considered exempt from registration. They're also considered exempt from insurance
insurance requirements under 2822011. And there is, this exemption is also listed in federal regulation for commercial driver licensing in 49 CFR 383.3, and it exempts these communities from the road skills test for commercial driver licensing purposes. The same criteria is also in DMV Regulation 2AAC 90220, which allows these communities, drivers in these communities, to be exempt from taking, again, the road skills test for a non-commercial driver license, for a standard driver license.
Okay, thank you very much. Wow, I didn't realize all that. So, that very informative. Thank you. Okay, Representative Gruenberg.
This was originally drafted by Mr. Lockhart. I made a couple of grammatical changes in it. I changed does not apply to do not apply, and I put a quote at the end. The version you should have has the, should have the quotes at the beginning and the end. But I'm a little bit, Ms. Brewster, if I may, through the chair, ma'am. Could I ask Ms. Brewster?
Representative Gruenberg, yes, I will ask Ms. Brewster to comment.
If I don't know if she's seen this.
Ms. Brewster, have you seen the conceptual amendment number 3?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have.
Now, have you seen the one with the quotation marks around both ends of it?
Yes, ma'am, the version in front of me has quotations on both ends of this.
Okay, good. Good. Thank you. Just wanted to make sure that you knew it. Now, Representative Gruenberg, do you have a question for her?
I do, yeah. Ms. Brewster, you've given us citations to statutes, to federal regs, and to state regs. Is this drafted the best way to conform to those?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I think I understand the intent. I think it could be modified a bit to refer to the specific statute that sets the criteria for rural, what's considered off-road system. And it would be my suggestion on line 4, after the word areas, inserting the words exempt under 2810011, so that it's very clear that the way that I read this, trying to put on a different hat here, the way that I read this, I would be concerned that areas of the state such as Juneau or Sitka or Ketchikan would be exempted under this because it simply states that it's off the road system. And so maybe if we refer to 2810011, which sets the criteria of not connected to the road system and a community with a daily traffic volume of 499 or less, that it would be more specific.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Whitney. And I think because it's a conceptual amendment and because the bill drafter is here, I think we've got that covered. So, Representative Gruenberg.
With the chair's permission, since we're going to have this back before us anyway after you do your due diligence, I'm not going to offer this today.
All right.
I'm going to ask that Ms. Brewster and Mr. Lockhart communicate with sponsor staff and mine to come up with a better version. And if that's agreeable, and I would ask one more question, if I might.
Representative Gruenberg.
Ms. Brewster, you have now reviewed the bill, and you've seen the two amendments that we've conceptually adopted here. Is there anything else technically in the bill that you think we might add or delete? And if you want to have time to answer that, if you can get back to us in the next few days. But is there anything that you think that we ought to do further with the bill aside from working on conceptual amendment number 3?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I will certainly get back with you to discuss any other items that the DMV thinks should be considered.
And if you would get that through the chair, then I will pass it on to the rest of the committee members.
Madam Chair, and the sponsor, too.
I'm sure I will.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Then that's all the amendments that we do have today. And so we'll set this aside then. Our next meeting will be March 29th, and we'll just see you all there. And meeting adjourned.
Thank you very much.
What happened to amendment, Madam Chair?